Welcome, everybody, to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast, or good morning from my side. This is a special episode. We originally recorded this episode as a webinar with Data AI, and we had a great chemistry between Lexi from Data AI, Brett from Liquid and Grid, Jen, Cress, and myself. And so we decided to distribute this episode, which we call a Twig special, to a little bit of a broader audience. In this specific episode, we talk about where we are in the cycle for gaming today. Have we hit the bottom? Are we heading towards the bottom, or are we on the way up? We discuss which areas in the gaming are growing, as well as going into details of what are the top engagement and monetization features of today, and discuss many other relevant and less relevant topics that you will likely find very insightful. Now, the official promotion for Data AI is this. It's a mobile performance standard providing the most accurate and complete set of mobile insights, helping companies succeed on mobile. Data AI customers make informed decisions about their app strategies to support tactical planning, business development opportunities, and competitive monitoring. The unofficial spiel for Data AI is that it's the best platform that I've personally used, but what makes it truly special, in my opinion, is the people. Lexi, Randy, and the whole crew from Data AI have been nothing but extremely helpful and insightful and everything you could wish for from a partner whenever we're looking for any kind of data and insights. And it's been a pleasure working for them for many, many years now. And if you're not using Data AI, I really think that you're missing out, whether you're missing out on the platform or missing out on the great people that work at the company. So without further ado, let's talk about the market. And I just wanted to give a special shout out to Data AI.
I'm Lexi. Looking at the insights, and we're really excited to have you guys here. I think for folks who are joining, we tend to do a lot of slides in our normal webinars, but this one's very different. We have a great panel, as you can see. So we actually don't have slides for you guys today. We can link to plenty of data after we have this conversation and throughout, and always reach out if you're looking for a specific report or specific analysis. We're happy to point you there. But today is more about hearing from the folks in the gaming world and what we think is coming in 2024 and how to prepare. And now I will let everyone introduce themselves. We'll kick it off with Mishka.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on. So I'm Mishka Katkov, first member of Deconstructor Fun. My background is in product, game director, and studio lead positions in various very known gaming companies. I've also set up my own startup, so I have some startup experiences, and pretty active in angel investing. So that's my background, and that's where my thoughts and ideas that Cress will call stupid during this webinar are coming from.
Awesome. And we've got Brett joining as well.
I'm Brett Novak, CEO and founder of Liquid and Grit, the leading product research company in mobile gaming, or one of them, I believe. And prior to that, I was a lead product manager at Zynga and also Dartmouth Business School and a couple other places as well. And excited to be here.
Awesome. And we now have Jen as well.
Howdy, everyone. I'm Jen Donahoe. I'm a strategic marketing consultant at Beta Hat Market Research and Jade Inferno Consulting. And I also have the pleasure of being a co-host of Twig This Week in Games, which is our podcast on Deconstructor of Fun. So this is going to be a fun one to have Brett sit in the guest chair and Lexi to what we do on a weekly basis, which is basically make fun of the game industry. So with data inspired fun is what we do.
I love that. Thank you. And we also have, you guys might not recognize from our promotions, but we have a sneak guest coming in. Eric Crest has joined us at the last minute. We're very excited. Welcome, Eric.
Hey, Eric, I'm filling in for Mr. Nico, who couldn't make it for whatever reason. But I'm Principal of Gossamer Consulting. I run an investment advisory service for investors. And then I also consult for industry like Warner Brothers and Amazon and TBD for next year on who I'm going to be consulting for. So yeah, and I also help host the Deconstructor Fun Twig podcast every week and talk trash about the gaming industry.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, I'm going to stop sharing. As I mentioned to the folks on the call, we are not doing a presentation. We're just having a conversation today. So with that, we will kick it off. The first question, I believe, will probably be tackled by everyone. So fair game for who wants to jump in. But first, where do you think we are in the cycle for gaming? Are we at the bottom? Are we heading towards the bottom? Are we on the way up? I'll let you guys share thoughts. I too have thoughts from data AI side, but someone please jump in.
I will jump in since I've been looking at this pretty closely over the last couple of years.
Since you're invited a few hours ago.
Exactly. Exactly. I've been looking at this and actually did a presentation in Istanbul last year, kind of talking about this particular issue within the industry as on a more broad basis. And fundamentally, I think we have one or two years of declines ahead of us, and then perhaps getting to steady state. I think the challenges of IDFA, as well as the changes to Google, and also removal of fingerprinting for the rest of the cheaters out there, will create less fidelity and more challenges for acquisition on iOS as well as Google. And again, the biggest challenge is last year is that yields are going down. So if you look at the data, the yields are flattening while they've been increasing for the last like decade. And what that basically means is revenue growth is declining faster than downloads are improving. So, and basically, I think what this is the cause of is customers are spending less or the quality of downloads are going down. And I think it's the latter because of Apple and whatever Google does. So I think that's going to be the biggest challenge of the next few years. And what that also means finally is that we need to see a change in the type of games that are being made. The core games are no longer going to be as marketable as the casual. And so shifting to the casual will result in reduced revenue per install, which will also put pressure on yields for the overall market. So that's kind of where I see the market for the next couple of years. And I don't know, anybody else have a different opinion?
Jen, please.
Oh, I was just going to jump in on what Chris was saying and agree 100%. Isn't it also the consolidation of companies, smaller companies going away, or getting bought up by the bigger companies? Because because of everything you're saying, it's very difficult to market profitably. You have to spend a ton of money to make sure that your games rise to the top. So only the big are going to be able to fish in the new pond that's coming. Isn't that right, Chris? Like we've talked about that before.
100%. Like cost of development's gone up, but cost of marketing has gone through the moon. So yeah, it's going to, all these policies are benefiting the big that are happening out there. And yeah, without a huge budget, it's going to be really tough.
Yeah, I think Eric wasn't negative enough, so let me just continue and just broaden to a little bit of a broader gaming market. So I think starting off with macroeconomics, like we can see that the investments through the interest rate rises, we can see that the investments are being decreased, and that means less new games. That means, less risky bets and more focusing on key franchises. Macroeconomy also means that people have less money to spend. So that, of course, affects the game industry as a whole. And with the higher interest rates, we can see that M&A and IPOs are both kind of out of the question in larger scale. Of course, M&As on companies that are profitable is going to be still happening. And then we have two other factors that are on the economic side. We have geopolitics that are affecting companies with, some companies losing big markets that they used to be successful at, and they can't maybe publish in those markets anymore. So that's going to be an effect. And there's a competition that gaming faces from other sources of entertainment that it hasn't faced in previous economic downturns. So whether we're talking about dating apps, whether we're talking about streaming apps, whether we're talking about social media apps, or any type of apps, like we've seen from data AI reports, apps are pretty resilient to the economic downturn. And it looks like games are not that resilient as we thought after the 2008 downturn. And then when breaking gaming into PC, console, and mobile, PC, I think we see only few games as a service titles. It's a very red market. And if you talk to any developers who have, for example, published before on mobile and are now moving to PC, Steam, they would say that marketing, even though mobile has gotten significantly difficult, is still more difficult on PC side than it is on mobile. So that sort of a silly rush that was happening that we're going to move to PC, that's from a puddle to a pool, ladies and gentlemen. Then we have the console that is kind of struggling between three different business models, not struggling, but juggling between three different business models, while the user base is pretty much static. So we have a subscription model that we're going to talk about probably later in this webinar. We have the premium games that are getting constantly more expensive, and we have the games as a service, which essentially rely on users' time, which is again a very feeble resource. And then finally, going to mobile. Privacy apocalypse. I don't have much to add to what Chris was saying, but we know that marketing games is more expensive, and that leads to challenges for especially smaller studios to find their niche. And I would just say, on a positive side, there, you know, the way to counter all these negative effects is really to focus on efficiency that we're seeing from a lot of companies. And efficiency, in all simplicity, means doing more with less. And of course, that means, in many sense, many would adequate that to AI. So AI is naturally a big help for many companies. But it's overall that thinking of those more jolly years are behind us for now, and you have to figure out how to be more efficient as a company. And that, in my opinion, also means that companies need to be more deliberate. And it's sort of a time that we're going to start like kind of trying everything and just like throw ideas on the wall and kind of try all different type of games. Those are over. So you have to be very deliberate and very efficient as a company to survive the 2-year downturn that I think we're in.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of those assessments. I would put it as we've hit the bottom, but stabilized here. I think a lot of the gaming companies have obviously made adjustments in terms of their cost structure, which will help with the loss of profit margins that we've seen because of IDFA. And once they do that and then move players off of the platform and get more profit, they'll be allowed to experiment. And that's what's really, I think, going to bring us out, at least in terms of the mobile gaming development market, out of where we are now, is the ability to experiment. And Chris alluded and Jen alluded to that fact that we've become more of a large company industry, and that's reduced experimentation. But once we start getting more profitable, smaller, mid-sized gaming companies are going to start experimenting with different platforms, different channels, and eventually, just mathematically, a company is going to find useful ways of getting users, whether it be through TikTok or celebrities or YouTube or whatever it may be. We won't be able to probably predict it. That will lead us out of this, bottom. I think the other thing that we're is very hard to predict is larger impacts to the industry. We wrote about recently in the Digital Markets Act that's going to go live early next year, which will allow more companies to move off platform, or more companies to move more users off platform, and things like that. I mean, Apple and Google may make a move to make the environment easier for developers. So there are some larger impacts that we can't predict that I could very likely see happening next year for the positive. So like I said, I think we're at the bottom, but stabilizing, and kind of, I think it'll be another year before we come out.
I think I think the bottom is going to be in 24. Sorry, Jenna, I had to jump in, but I think what we're not accounting now is a lot of startups will fall in 24. So now we've seen big companies get more efficient, and I think they will continue to be more efficient. I 100% agree on off store revenues, et cetera. Those are, like, in my opinion, efficiency elements. But the startup wave, I think, is going to be in 24, and that's going to be a a bloodbath.
Yeah, I want to just plus one what everyone's been saying and dive into just two topics. One on marketing. Mishka's right that please don't run to PC and console and think that the marketing efficiency and attribution there is better. It's not, it's worse. And especially with the concerns around using, your IP track, like it is not better. So please don't like run there thinking that it is. However, there are other options that are available in marketing. There is a lot of growth coming up, obviously with TikTok, massive success there. YouTube Shorts, they are now starting to roll out YouTube Shorts. It's not everywhere yet, but it's getting there. So imagine that that's competing. YouTube is still the number one platform for Gen Z to be able to discover new brands, including games. So don't count out YouTube and what YouTube is doing there on the gaming side. The other thing I want to touch on is real-time payments and web shops. And so while this is, and this goes to what Brett was saying about off-platform, because of what the DMA rules are doing in Europe. So in March of 2024, the DMA will go into effect, which iOS will have to actually almost allow sideloading. And so in iOS 17.2, sideloading is likely going to be permitted. We'll see. But because of the DMA rules, a lot of the ability to tie into web shops will increase. What we know and hearing from people that we work with, web shops are making up a lot of the declines that we're seeing in IAP revenue and are becoming ways that are driving, I think, accounting for 11% of the overall revenue. According to Chris Huish, who I just interviewed at Exola, these are some numbers that he is giving out that says that off-platform payments are a great way to drive revenue. So a lot of companies are going to be investigating more of these types of systems.
Yeah, but the problem with this argument about off, I know Exola is a great business and they're doing really well, and there's other Coda and others that are doing it. But the problem with this analysis is that this isn't solving the problem of acquiring new users, right?
Correct.
So if users are churning and payers churn just like regular people, non-payers, you're still having no way of filling the buckets, so to speak, of spenders. And it's a temporary solution to a longer term problem of lack of quality of user acquisition and attribution and targeting. And that's the biggest challenge. And the only thing I'll push back on a little bit is I don't believe in the macro. There's no real evidence that macro is really having a big play in this from a game perspective and a user perspective. Maybe from a company perspective in terms of how many games are being made, maybe. But I would not put macro as a reason to why we're seeing declines this year and last year.
What do you mean? In the presentation, Chris, when you did the presentation at in Istanbul, you were followed by the Google head, and he had the inflation rate and the spending in games just like correlate. And I know I've been reading data AI reports as well. It's like he was showing apps and he was showing games and he was showing inflation. And when inflation went up, the spending on in-app purchases went down, but the spending on apps was stable.
We've seen that. In our reports as well. So that was one of the things that surprised me, to be honest, was that, you know, when we started to look at disposable income across multiple countries, particularly the US, we saw that as disposable income shrank, your spend in game shrank, whereas for non-gaming, it actually increased, which for us was saying more of your wallet just kind of migrated to mobile, right? Like maybe you're not directly spending it on a desktop subscription or something like that. Like you're actually just doing it through mobile.
Compelling. I'm going with Chris on this. I think potentially what it's having effect on is stock prices, which is having effect on how these large gaming companies are spending their marketing, which is and then in turn reducing revenue. But the financial downturn in, what was it, 2008, I mean, didn't hit mobile gaming at all. So like
you there was no mobile gaming. There was no mobile,
but yeah, it didn't mobile, hit console and PC. Right, like Facebook, but Facebook, like, you know, the equivalent of it, right? I mean, like microtransactions didn't move. Right. So no, there was I was Zynga Poker lead revenue PM. We had Zynga Poker revenue back then. You know, so it didn't it didn't touch us. So I think it does have an effect in terms, because we've consolidated and because more large console companies now own mobile gaming companies, which the stock prices impacts it. But yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think that's, I don't think that macroeconomic inflation causes someone to spend like $5 on an app. Dude, they're spending, the entertainment. In fact, I would say the opposite. When people lose their jobs, they generally turn to distractions and entertainment as a source of escape. And it would, I think it's somewhat inversely correlated to downturns.
Brett, what we're saying is that when they turn for that escape, they give that escape money to Netflix, to Tinder, to you name it. They don't give it to Zynga.
No, I would. Flex,
I mean, not because AI of their, like not, not, yeah, but not because they don't have a lot of money. I mean, just be, it, like, I think that would happen regardless of whether inflation was happening or not. They're just choosing. I mean, streaming, and certainly it's getting more competitive for the gaming market. I agree with that. As a percentage of total revenue, gaming is declining on mobile devices. So it's certainly getting more competitive, but I don't think that's related to them making a financial decision. I mean, a $5 transaction in a game versus $15 on Netflix. I mean, at this point, I spend more money on streaming than I do on gaming. And I think a lot of people do too. So I don't think that argument stands up. I think it is getting more competitive, and that is what's happening, but I don't think it has to do with macroeconomic decisions. Like, individuals aren't that logical in terms of their $5 to $10 spending budget, right? I mean, what kind of dent does that have in their overall budget?
And also, just to look at the data itself, like, according to data AI anyway, you know, we're up 11% in France this year, we're up 9% in the UK, 6% in Germany. Like, they're not having great economic times in those countries, yet we're up, right? You know, and then meanwhile, we're down 20% in China, which is the China market is definitely macro, right? That's a problem in China. But I, from a Western perspective, I think it's all IDFA, it's all Apple, it's all the things that they've done to make this business so much more difficult for the incumbents. And without some of these bigger games, which we're going to talk about later, like, the market would be a lot worse, right? Monopoly Go is basically carrying this whole industry from a growth perspective. It's nuts. You know, every genre is down except for puzzle to some degree, but then and primarily because of Monopoly Go, which is insane, you know. So I don't see, anyway, we'll continue this with what the title slate. I don't see a title next year that's going to comp that at all. So we'll see.
We have a few great questions. I just wanted, while we were... We're only on question one. I was ambitious. There's five questions, folks. We've gone through question one. So there's one question that I wanted to ask that actually spoke to something Mishka mentioned, and we sort of all were discussing here, about how will AI tech promising to bring AAA quality to smaller, medium-sized gaming studios level the playing field, making it less about studio size and budget and more about creativity and innovation. I know we spoke about the effects on small pubs and indie pubs specifically, and we mentioned efficiencies through AI. So I think that question was more towards you, Mishka, but anyone can jump in.
So efficiency, like, through AI? Like,
yeah, how will AI tech promising to bring AAA quality to smaller, medium-sized gaming studios level the playing field? Essentially, will it make it less about studio size and budget and more about creativity and innovation?
I think the communication that I'm hearing, and at least what the executives are saying, is that we will be able to make more with what we have now. And that is the kind of a communicate. So we don't need to hire that many more people to make bigger games. But I think on the reality will be is that there will be a lot of studios who will be fine with what they have now, and they will just try to do less of that with the help of AI. There's a lot of different AI tools coming in for game development, and we'll see kind of where the pendulum sets. And it will be based on the appetite of investment for these companies. But for sure, especially when it comes to AAA, and why not even modern mobile games, that any kind of efficiencies is very important because it can cut quite significantly the cost of getting the game to the market.
Okay, well, let me give you an answer, not a non-answer. The
thing is, like, we don't know yet.
But no, we know specifically. It's very specific, right? Like, 1/100th of the budget is making these games and 99 is marketing these games. So therefore, it doesn't even matter if you save 20 or 30% on making the games. If you can't don't have the money to actually market the games, it's freaking irrelevant if AI is building the whole freaking thing. You know, like, let's be real. Like, that's where we're at right now.
It's for successful games. That's what you're saying, Chris. Like, for the top grossing games, yes, the smallest percentage goes on development. But then there's a ton of games that get killed all the time in development or in early soft launch because they've spent too much, they've been too slow, they've been too this, too that, and then the executives don't have the appetite to push on the marketing because they've spent so much till date.
Okay, so fine. You can fast prototype better and get more products in market for testing, really, et cetera. Like, but still, the problem is that you need the 99% of your budget that you don't have to spend on marketing. So where's that money coming from?
But think about it. There are games like Raid Shadow Legends. I think it was developed by like 800 people. And like, yeah, like that like was
10 years ago.
almost 10. But anyways, like those are big games. And those type of games are being made on mobile with hundreds and hundreds of people. And that's a huge investment. And when you start racking up those costs, and especially if somebody's kind of looking behind your neck, like, what's going to happen with this? Are the numbers so promising? Or should we go through this? Like, if there's any way to get more efficient, I think that gives more leeway to the teams.
I'll just say it's just the development cost is such a small part of the overall budget. I'm not really too sure if saving 20 or 30% on that is really meaningful in the context of what it takes in order to build a mobile game. And then console game, console PC is a different discussion, which is probably not part of this conversation. I just don't think AI is going to really that relevant there as well, from what everyone I talk to anyway, only on the margin. Then what your answer makes sense, right? On the margin, it helps the teams become more efficient.
Yeah, it's like a web shop. It's not going to make or break your game, but it's going to be additive to the bottom line.
Yeah, and it's helpful to the marketing teams to create assets, to repurpose assets, but it is not game-changing. The same thing applies. Especially with branded content. Like, if you're a brand, AI just doesn't help you because you have so many different requirements for your branded content that, you know, maybe your background changes or maybe you repurpose it, but it's not a be-all, end-all solution for marketing either.
Hey, thanks, guys. Okay, we'll jump into question number two. What are the specific growth areas for gaming next year? Any specific titles, specific games, and more through the mobile lens, but happy to chat if there's anything on the PC or console side that you think's bubbling up. Geos, or genres, any specific areas that are growth? This could be growth in downloads or direct spend as well.
I'll jump in first on a couple of things. One is casual action RPGs. And so one of the games that we covered recently was called Mo.co, coming out of Supercell. And it's the idea of like, hey, how do you take Diablo Lite or Diet Diablo and find a way for that to be successful on mobile? And so Mo.co is a game to watch. Another one, you know, if I were to make a prediction, would be social casino hybrids. And so with the success of Monopoly Go and the success of, you know, building on the success of Coin Master, I think companies are starting to look at ways that they are going to take some of those asynchronous features or the revenge mechanics that we see that came from, you know, Mishka pointed out Build and Battle back in the day that are now showing up in these social casinos. I would be on the lookout for hybrids, just like what Survivor.io did maybe like earlier in the year or last year, and start to like hybridize mid-core and casual. So hybrid casual was a thing earlier in the year. So maybe it's hybrid social casino coming. Those are things I would look out for.
Yeah, I mean, I would say on a geo side, like the couple markets that have been actually growing through all this transition, has obviously been India, which we've covered on the podcast ad nauseum. Interesting market, but lots of challenges there. Let's see. I was just looking at this. South Korea, for some reason, had a great year this year, and I didn't really delve into why. Taiwan and some of the European countries that I mentioned, France, Germany, UK. Like, from a geo perspective, it just it's still kind of a mess in the West, but there are some pockets of growth. And then from a genre perspective, it's really quite simple. It's not rocket science. It's like go casual and forget core, because core is struggling across the board in the West. So things like Match are up like 14%. Party, which is basically
Bumble Guys,
Monopoly Go, is up 106% or something crazy. So those are the genres. Like, if you stay casual, then, you know, I think that's where the opportunity is going to lie when you don't have the ability to market, target audiences. So both from a genre perspective.
There as well. Match has been doing well predominantly. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. What did I say? Did I say puzzle?
You said party, which I think is...
Yeah, semantics, maybe.
I meant Match. I meant Match. Sorry. Yeah. There's a different classification on your competitor. So Match is up huge and Party. I mean, you just got to look at the big Playrix and Dream, right? What those guys are doing, because they're just destroying it out there.
Okay, well, let me take a little bit different. So when we look at the number of players overall, and like, what is the growth of players as a mount? So MENA is 6 times faster than US and EU at the moment, and it's twice faster compared to APAC. So really, like, MENA is the most growing area in terms of looking into the future. In terms of, like, if we're looking at the genres, like, of course, as casual gaming was mentioned, like Match with Tile, traditional Match 3 with Visual Progress, with Merge, all of those are seeing significant growth, both in revenue and maybe not that much in downloads. And then some genres that I think Jen was kind of referring to is like these casual casino-ish, like I would put solitaire type of a games there, like a casual card games. We see hidden object games, we see building games, all kind of doing pretty well on the casual side. And I think honorable mention are up quite significantly at the moment. That's of course Monopoly Go, but even before them, we're seeing casino doing pretty well on the download side. We see revenue trailing there, just like we see in the more core titles, but at the same time, we don't know what their off-platform revenues are. Casino especially is very much customer relationship-focused type of a business, where I would assume that they would be the first ones in the line to push their customers to make their purchases outside the platform, closely followed by the strategy in the RPG games. And then in terms of like the fastest-growing genres that are maybe not the biggest ones, extraction shooters, huge growth. I think that's the biggest growing genre, at least when I was looking at my little bit of outdated numbers in data AI. And then the roguelikes. So anything hybrid casual is big right now. So Habi, of course, has been at the forefront with Archero, then Survivor IO, Snaker. But we see Homa Games, Wudu, Quali, all really jumping in into this hybrid casual pool, where they are leverage their publishing capabilities, having strong building their live ops capabilities, and really getting that bulk of fun, marketable, easy access core gameplay, and then settling up with enough retention meta mechanics to allow them to monetize much more efficiently. So I think that's kind of like my spiel on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one note there, casino companies are already doing it pretty effectively. Playtika just reported they have 25% of their revenue off platform already. Exactly. And their goal is to hit 30 in the next year. So yeah. I would expect, again, with the DMA, that it might even go way beyond that. I don't want to say the same thing, but the overall theme is similar, that games that have figured out how to find users are going to do well. So I don't necessarily think that fits into a specific genre, but games that have wide user base or wide appeal or are associated with a specific group that can be easily marketed to, right? Like if there is a younger group that it's specifically targeted and it's broad-based, it can be effective, right? Or if it's casual and it's broad-based, even if it's core and it has some type of user that it's specifically targeting, like you're seeing that with IP successes like Monopoly Go and things like that, where they can find a group of people through the current marketing landscape, they can be effective. So I don't necessarily, you know, word games are another example, pretty broad base, specific to a specific group. So I don't necessarily think that one genre or next is that much better. There are some, I mean, casino is very difficult to break into, right? There are some that you can look at and you can kind of, not talking about social casino, I'm talking about traditional casino, which I debate whether the games in social casinos should have casino associated with them. And I won't get into that too deeply, but that's generally my take on where the growth aspects are. And of course, what Chris said in terms of geos, there's some positives there. Although, I mean, predominantly the money is still going to be in the major countries for the major companies, right? Like they're just the US, Europe countries are just going to dominate in terms of revenue production and will for the next several years still. So those are my takes.
Yeah. Just from the data perspective, if you just look at, you know, since the peak in 2021, just to be clear, casino's down 16%, racing is down 50%. Shooting is down 50%. Like building a shooter in this space is insanity, right? Simulations down 25, strategies down 18, RPG down 20. Puzzle is basically flat, match is up 5. And what's the other one that you guys are talking about? Oh, of course, the party thing is up 100% because of Monopoly Go. This is all revenue. All revenue.
Versus 2021.
Yeah, 2023 versus year to date versus 2021. So it's a disaster out there, is what I'm trying to say. Go casual. Don't make a casino game. Like you'd be mad. It's madness to go out there and build a casino game or a strategy game or even an RPG unless it's like really highly.
I mean,
licensed.
The counter to that is it's always been madness, right? I mean, the gaming industry has always been a sweepstakes mechanic. I mean, if you look at the history of casino, we've said that for a decade that you should never enter casino. And there's been one or two winners in that market every few years that we haven't expected. So, I mean, the gaming industry has never been a safe bet. I mean, it just never happened. There's degrees of how safe it is, right? I mean, Mishka talk to this. But I'm just saying there's not that many new games that are successful in the gaming industry every year. I mean, it's a handful or two, right?
But when CPIs are almost double, like for strategy, for instance, if they go from 6 to 12, right? I mean, strategy games, there are three big.
No, I get your argument. The argument that it's very difficult and it's even more difficult now, right? And you can go through the numbers, but I think that the logical, like, this is going to be a difficult thing to do was the case 5 years ago. It was the case 3 years ago. It was the case 7 years ago. Gaming has always been an extremely difficult business to go into. It's you either are super successful or you're not for the most, right? You're dead. It's always been a sweepstakes mechanic. And it is more a sweepstakes mechanic now than it was before, but it's never been like a Liquid and Grit like business model, right? Like people don't go into it there are like the companies that generally do this. All I'm saying is like, I just think that the arguments that we have right now have been true for 10 years, you know?
I'm not gonna let you go in on that one, Brett. Like, because the rug has been pulled from under everybody in this industry by Apple in terms of user acquisition, right? So how about this? When Facebook removed, when Facebook removed the ability to market games on their platform, you know, that was incrementally more challenging on Canvas to survive in that industry. And that industry basically went away, right? It's gone now, right? Because they changed the fundamental nature of the platform itself, right? And what I've been arguing since the beginning of this is that is exactly what Apple has done. It's made it almost double. I don't know what the number is, but it's like incrementally.
Yeah, but it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop people from trying to do it. It's the same thing. I mean, Chris, we talk about basketball with our kids, right? Like, think about the chances of any child becoming an NBA basketball star.
It's not, that's not
a logical argument would mean don't ever have anybody play basketball, right? millions and millions of people are having their kids train every single day to become an NBA basketball star. That's... the same thing happens for, I guarantee right now there are gaming companies getting started today. And they're like, we're going to be the one to do this, because the becoming a successful gaming companies is the pro sports of the tech world. So I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I don't think people are making that argument. No one wants to like start a fintech company today and hit it big. Those people, they want to start a gaming company. I mean, Mishka is a super smart guy. 3 years ago or how many years ago, he's like, I'm going to start a gaming company. I think he wanted to be like,
I wouldn't categorize myself as super smart. Let's not
Did I say super? I said smart guy. I don't think I said super.
That was before IDFA.
Yeah, right?
that was before the changes. It was still.
What were the chances of it being successful? I mean, it was still bad.
Look,
it's even worse now. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at the market, it's even worse.
I totally agree. It's worse. I'm just saying, I don't think it's going to stop people from starting gaming companies.
Let me be clear on this point. If you're playing to the market, then you build things that are, can be successful in this market. What I'm saying is that you cannot build a strategy game. You cannot build a traditional RPG game. You cannot build a traditional casino game and hope to be successful. That was not the case before IDFA. These companies came and they replicated the success of every other game out there by creating a better mousetrap, because the market was there. The CPIs were at a level in which you could be profitable by your, with your spend. That is no longer the case, right? So it's a different market. That's what I'm trying to say. So things have changed, and Apple was the catalyst, and Google will continue it next year. And then Apple will continue it with fingerprint removing. But when UA costs go from $6 to $12 for RPGs and probably $10 to $20 for strategy games, that's a problem, right? That is a fundamental problem in this industry that needs to be addressed in terms of what types of games you're marketing, or whether you're licensing, or all these other things that you can do in order to counteract that. That's different.
On a positive note, you know, having access to some of these younger companies that you know, many of them, of course, suffering, but some of them are reporting incredibly good numbers and growing very profitably. So that on mobile, and I just wanted to say that there is still space, and they are very smart in what category they're investing and who they're competing against. But there are companies that are quite successful, even startups, and are able to find their, but they're not doing the stupid thing where they're going in competing in RPG or strategy or casino or any of the genres that Chris mentioned. But if you get data AI, you would see that there's a lot of different subgenres that you could choose from and rather target those than maybe the ones that are declining.
For the sake of time, I'm going to jump in and ask another question, but this has been very good. I like the debate and discussion. I do want to see, so we talked so much about like user acquisition. I know that's definitely a hurdle in the industry that unfortunately is just very difficult to overcome at the moment. On the other side, with respect to what you can control, since we can't control those costs from a CPI perspective, we've got like really great product people on. So I wanted to make sure we asked a question around what features essentially can you kind of focus on and build to increase engagement and monetization. So I'm just curious about, from your perspective, you know, for Jen and Brett especially, what are the kind of top engagement and monetization features you're seeing on the rise or expect to see more of in 2024 that can help increase that profitability?
Go for it, Brett.
Sure, I'll jump in and you know, in the essence of time, I'll keep it pretty high level. But the couple things, the first thing that we're seeing is longer and more engaging new user progressions. So companies are going back, reinvesting, re-experimenting with their new user flow and seeing some really strong results. A great example of that is Redecor released My Design Journal, which did very, very well and increased D30 retention by 11% and revenue by 6% month over month. And that made the early progression more comprehensive, more involved, and actually included UGC as well. The Second thing is we're seeing still this a lot of mini games do extremely well and they're more complex. I think this is somewhat of a reaction to what we're talking about here, which is trying to be a little bit more broad based as a game. So core games are releasing casual mini games. Casual mini games are releasing more core based. Casual games are releasing more core based mini games. So they're giving a broader offering to their players to keep them engaged and stop them from jumping to another app. The third is we're seeing more social hubs in places that we would not expect to see them, places like casino and other genres, again, trying to cultivate more engagement and retention with the current user base, because as again, we've talked about, it's extremely difficult to get a new user. So what can product teams do but invest in retaining their current user base and also increase ARPDAU numbers? And then the fourth kind of a little bit more hot take, I think, is the sweeps mechanic is an interesting new submarket that I think will be a place of potential growth for a lot of more core casino genres as the experiment. We're seeing a lot of growth of that off platform. And now that a lot of these mobile companies are having closer relationship with their users, there is an opening for different type of business models that they can develop. It could be real world stuff. It could be more of this sweeps model thing. It can be a lot of different things as they have like a one-to-one relationship with their users, as opposed to going through a platform that places more regulation on how they can monetize these users. And then the fourth is something that we've talked about. I think more interactive stories, more dynamic stories with the advent of adding AI logic to games is a pretty interesting thing in 2024.
Let me just add one thing to Brett's number two. I think your two is mini games. So, and it ties into UA. So fake ads, everyone talks about fake ads. They absolutely F up your retention features in your game because a player comes in, they think they're getting one thing and they get something else. So the way that you can utilize the idea of if your UA is drying up and you start to experiment with a fake, and by fake ad, it just means like, hey, we're going to show you a game experience that doesn't actually exist in the game. What you can do in conjunction with your product team is have a button on the side of your app that collects all of those mini games. So fake ad equals mini game in this case. Tile Busters does this. Envoy does this in 4X strategy. You come in and there's a place to go inside of your app where you can engage with these features. It increases your retention and increases all of the KPIs coming out of your UA. So that's one way to tie in the idea of overcoming UA challenges with a product feature.
It's also an excellent way to experiment with new game development too. And that's what we're likely seeing in some of these games.
Yes.
This is a really catered topic for Brett. I mean, he literally runs a company with like 50 people who just investigate on which feature work and how well. So let me take a more like a high level stand on this and how you could use Liquid and Grit to populate these different strategies. So overall, like I was actually today, I was doing some work and I was listening to Adam Telfer's GDC presentation from 2014, and it still makes sense. And he broke down long-term retention in five different steps, and you can populate this with all these features. So first and foremost was creating a long-term goal or an aspiration. And I think, Brett, you talked something about story, but we think more about games is like they have to create a feeling of why do you want to invest into this game? Why do you want to play this for the coming month or so? Then the second one was creating a mechanic that encourages players to invest into the long term of the game. And that's what we have in most of the games. It's the collection, the crafting, the evolving of various items and characters and those metagame features that play in your head when you're not playing the game. Again, Liquid and Grit, I believe, does RPG, RPG analysis. So I think you can find every single feature in your mind from there that would fit here. The third step was creating a session design that both pulls players in daily as well as paces players naturally in the progression. I think this comes down to like social media apps are best here, because they create that social pressure. Like you can't just post and ghost. I mean, there are some people who post and ghost, but most people need to come back and see what is happening with that post that I made. And that is a sort of a self-inflicted social pressure. And I think these type of elements, as we're talking about different social elements entering into different genres, in the end, it comes down to the social pressure of the third point that Adam mentioned. And the fourth one was like a creating that social mechanic that people require for others to do their best, meaning that in order to be at the top, in order to be competitive in whatever game you're playing, however casual it is, you have to engage with the social mechanics to be at the top. And then finally, is the most important piece. This is where the AI comes in, and that is the understanding the cost of content production by your team versus content consumption by your consumers. So basically, how are you going to pace the development so you can keep on that content treadmill, whether you're doing it internally, whether you have your users generate, or whether you have procedural content generation. And these five elements, like, I think they're still valid. Maybe they're more valid now that they were a couple of years ago, when you can just play the marketing game and not even make games with long-term retention, just milk them with in-app ads and don't care about more monetization. But those days are over, and now you have to really concentrate on retention. And now the things that we were focusing on in 2014 are, you know, important again, and features and metagames are becoming more important because marketability is becoming less important.
I'll do a really simple one on this one. So this was a strategy that Kevin Chu said when I was at Kabam ages ago. And he basically, and at the time I poo-pooed the idea, but I was ultimately wrong, particularly now that with IDFA and everything that's happening. Build casual games with deep monetization design. Like that's kind of the strategy that needs to be taken to attract the broadest audience possible and provide the most highest spenders the ability to spend at depths that you and I would be uncomfortable with. So that's my advice.
I wanted to just quickly kind of double click on two things, something Jen said and Brett. So one thing, we did have a question and from the audience as well. Brett, can you explain the sweeps mechanic for folks who might not be aware what that is?
Well, I think it's in reference to, the sweeps mechanic. Oh, well, it's like a real money RMG style of play where players are playing the game and they're getting tickets, and then whomever like wins the sweeps can win a real world prize. So it's kind of a workaround real money gambling.
I think you were using it though in the example of there can be only one winner when you were.
Yeah, I used it twice. The other I used was for the fact that like in gaming industry overall, there's one winner and lots of losers.
And then I wanted to also ask, I think we've got second Brett showing up. I wanted to ask as well. So you mentioned sort of in My Dream Journal, as part of the flow, you sort of mentioned the early progression of users, but also user-generated content. And I wanted to kind of ask, especially with what Jen said in reference to sort of how maybe product features can help with UA, is, you know, we've seen how popular TikTok is. Monopoly Go used TikTok very effectively for both alike. And this is something, Brett, your team did a great analysis, and you can see it on Data AI. We published it as well about how leveraging communities, especially TikTok, and like influencer style, but then letting it be everybody, right? Like just people communicating about the game. How does user-generated content within a game as a feature, how can that help as well with your UA? Is there a world where you can encourage that posting to TikTok and that could come pay dividends in some way eventually? Or is there any there essentially? Just wanted to double click on that piece you mentioned.
Well, UGC is obviously an awesome mechanic to develop in a game if you can. I mean, it's very difficult. In Redecor's case, it fit within the style of the game where players could create things that were designed. But certainly it helps with virality because players are more likely to share it to their, to their feeds or whatever they're going to share it to. I mean, I'm thinking back to feeds. I mean, I'm thinking back to when Farmville allowed people to share their farm, right? Like people were bragging about that, right? Like it's a good example of it. And certainly now in today's world, they're posting videos to TikTok of their game experience, which is a huge way to get users. So Yeah, I certainly think that that's a great example of how they can create a channel. It's difficult to do, and it's really only specific to certain game types. That said, I think developers today that are creating new games need to factor that into their concepts. And when we did a teardown of Fortnite, for example, they thought about the angle of the shooter partly to be back from the character so that it was more engaging to share. There was more of like, and then that made the cosmetics more valuable because the cosmetics were in the forefront of all the virality. And that led to obviously the monetization structure of it. So it's certainly something to consider. And if you can get it to work, it's awesome.
Yeah, this is a whole other podcast about how do you build either features or provide the tools through CapCut tools on TikTok. Yeah, this is a whole other, like, how do you allow your community to better leverage your app through the use of UGC material? Let's do one, Lexi. We got this.
Yeah. Okay. Follow up. I love it. I'm a big, watching TikTok over the years, I think I remember, gosh, I don't even know, 2017 or 2018, where we felt very proud of ourselves. We had a very catchy title of a slide in a State of Mobile report where we said the tidal wave of TikTok. And now when you look back, it's like this tiny little blip that, like, at the time seemed massive and we were talking about it. Now it's so big. But I think the thing that really got me with TikTok early was sharing your video to anywhere, right? Like, you could share your TikTok video to Instagram very easily. And it just had at the very end that little, like, TikTok, you know, it said your name and where you're going. And it was hard to make, to film or do something on Instagram and repost it to something else, right? Like, that was kind of closed loop. And I think TikTok really did well by that. Like, I think that was that social, the network effects really took off and the virality. And it was a very simple, it wasn't a push necessarily, just said you would just kind of go find that user after whatever it was. And that, I think, has been a very powerful lesson for some brands. Like, now we see, you know, other companies leveraging, letting you post other places. But for a little while, that wasn't an embedded feature for some social apps as well. Okay, we've got 2 minutes. We've got a lot of questions. I don't know if we have time to actually ask any of these. There's questions around how, you know, if the industry is unable to acquire and target high quality users, what can people do to better improve retention and monetization? I don't know if everyone has like a two word, a couple, a one sentence answer that if you were to look at improving your monetization and retention of your game in 2024, because targeting and acquiring users is so difficult, is there one snippet that each of you guys would recommend?
See above.
What's that? Sorry. Is that
good? See above. I think we hit on a bunch of those. Fake ads. No, email, just kidding.
Yeah. With the mini game, though. Tied in.
Yeah, with the mini game. Yeah. Email Brett. Like, seriously, Liquid and Grit offers great, great solutions for this.
Like a marketing campaign
to
for
the,
Brett.
Yeah. Listen to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. We'll follow up on all these questions on the next podcast.
EMF, yeah.
Let's just send Brett invoice after this.
Well, I'll give you one quick one. One really cool idea I heard, and I'm going to try to explain this very succinctly, is creating a game that funnels people in based upon their behavior. So they get pushed around where to different parts of the game that cater to them. So if they like puzzle, they go to puzzle. If they like simulation, they go to simulation. So the execution seems impossible, but you're like creating an app for everybody type thing. And I think that kind of design would be really, really cool. I haven't seen it in action yet, really. But that's an interesting idea. So
it reminds me of what Temu's done with leveraging iOS's custom product pages, where you can have your app store assets appear very tailored to one area. So when you have UA coming in, like, because Temu's so broad, if you're targeting someone with fast fashion and you're competing against Shein, you can have your Apple custom product page be fast fashion assets versus if you're targeting homewares, right? Like, you can, your ads are talking about the lamp you want to buy, and you get, when you land on the app store page, it's all about the lamps and the whatever. And they've done very well at those custom product pages of like funneling people based on what they're subsetting them in some way, whether it's a behavior or in this case, more of like a product interest.
That was a much better explanation. Thank you, Lexi.
I mean, it's 7 a.m. for me here. My brain finally turned on. So I'll leave with one little gem as I'm finally awake. All right. Thank you guys. This has been fantastic. It's really fun to have more of a dynamic conversation, and we've had a ton of people stick around for the whole time. So this has been great. Especially after, for those in the US, you guys hopefully had a great Thanksgiving and a nice little break. So it's good to turn your brain back on after, I guess, and before the holiday. So thanks to everyone. I'm just going to quickly, I know we're over, I'll pop up a quick slide for folks. We do, if you want to continue this conversation, we actually have a community as well for data AI to talk about all things gaming, mobile. You can continue the conversation here. There's a QR code, but you can go to data.ai/community as well. And pose questions to other folks and hear from some of our champions as well. Thank you to everyone for joining.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the whole episode. If you like this podcast, please do leave a comment and share the episode. If you want to access the Deconstructor of Fun community with hundreds of senior games folk, go to our website and apply to the Slack group. And if you want to get notified of all the new content we have coming out every week, do subscribe to the weekly Deconstructor of Fun newsletter. Finally, do remember, we love you guys and we appreciate you guys. Catch you next time.